You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
When New Yorkers buy a place with Street Easy, they have the local expertise they need to stay in the city. When they buy outside the city, they have regrets.
The only way to fix this place would be to move it back to Brooklyn.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the agent you need to never leave. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
The views and opinions of Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris should not be taken too seriously, especially when they give advice. Do not take Marshall's analogies literally, especially when it comes to Russell Dorsey. The sports thoughts of Rahimi and Harris may change at any time. Remember, it's just sports. Okay, thanks. Bye. Bye. Bye.
Rahimi and Harris. 10 to 2 on 670. The
trade deadline is tomorrow at 5 o'clock. Who becomes the difference maker on a Cubs team that unfortunately played 500 baseball in June and is now facing a sweep at the hands of the team who's played the best baseball over the last 2 months outright?
My biggest concern heading into the trade deadline a month ago, 2 months ago, is still my biggest concern heading into the trade deadline, and that is getting top-end starting pitcher and getting help with swing and miss stuff from both your starters and your relievers. Go get the pitchers. I said get two. I said get one of them at least as good as Shota Imanaga and Matthew Boyd. I will reserve judgment on this team and whether or not I think they can be World Series contenders until 5 p.m. on Thursday.
There are questions that we need answered.
I hope you have addressed your problems, because if you haven't, I don't care that you got a fresh, brand new extension. Jed, you got to get the job done.
Sandy Alcantara, the Marlins ace. Mitch Keller, the 29-year-old right-hander. Seth Lugo.
What about Tank?
Adrian Houser. Andrew Heaney. Eugenio Suarez.
What would you say you do here?
Come on.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
What a day! We broadcast live from the Scores Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. This is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score. There is confetti on the floor. We congratulate Danny Parkins on an outstanding Cubs for a Cure Radiothon. Congratulations to Danny. Marshall, do you have our final total?
Over $750,000, $758,004. That's the final total here from... Whew, 670 The Score.
And that's not even the final. It's still
climbing. It's still climbing.
It's just like the trade deadline where there's still deals that are tabulated. Money's still coming in.
And if you still want to donate, you have the rest of the weekend to do that. So please do so. I can tell you how to do that. Go to CubsForCure.com or text CURE25 to 41444. Amazing cause. What Danny did was unbelievable.
Or if you just want to call the Cubs, not to talk about the trade deadline, but to donate for Cubs for a Cure, 773-388-8270. Thank you again to everyone who donated. That is an amazing number. We smashed the number from last year. Last year was in the 500,000s, and that's nothing to sneeze at. This is just absolutely incredible. So thank you to everyone who donated, who listened, who spent time with us. And thanks to our Score front office team for assaulting Danny with more and more confetti. The man did it without caffeine.
He's got two confetti pumps, if you will. Two confetti bombs have been sent his way. Ray?
I will say, and it's much needed, I saw during the night hours when I checked in, and our guy Danny, I put on the Marquee Sports Network app, and took a look at what Danny was doing, and he was drinking a Red Bull. Much needed, much needed, though.
Danny drink caffeine!
I had the same reaction in person when I was here. I was like, Danny, I can't believe you.
See, this is why not only can you watch the Cubs on Marquee, which is very important. Also, they have Bears content. I like the Bears content they have on the Marquee shows. But also, you can catch Danny drinking caffeine. It's about time. You know, he's 38. I'd say it's two kids. It's time to roll in caffeine into your game. I've been doing that since I was 17, and I've aged terribly. So I think it's time that Danny does, too.
Hey, he's almost a man. He's almost 40.
That's Ray Diaz, our producer, Robbie Triano as well, Brandon Fryer helping out. Who else do we need to shout out for the Cubs for a Cure Radiothon? Let's also give a special thank you to our Twitch team, not just our Twitch mob who donated and made a wonderful donation. Thanks to you guys. But also Connor O'Donnell, who shared his story, which was wonderful. Jacob Stutz helped out as well.
Yeah, and Robbie Triano, shout out to you for getting the first half of that radiothon from behind the glass. And then Adam Studzinski, he had the back half of that 12 hours behind the glass.
And not to pat myself on the back, but worked 10 to 10. So obviously, but like, honestly, what?
Oh, the baby, Cubs worked a 12-hour shift. Next up, you might even do more.
The power of this radio station this week has just been incredible. When you talk about what we did with Ryan Sandberg, some of the best things, like some of the best stories we've ever told this week, and also have the radiothon, the power of the station is incredible. What a great week for the Score.
The power of the listeners of the Score,
exactly,
are the ones who are incredible. I can't say thanks enough to everybody for just being here and being with us and being a part of it. And now the next job is to try to negotiate with Danny. I saw a lot of that going on. How much is it going to take you to come back? How much? How much? Well, I think, you know, if there's one thing I learned from the trade deadline yesterday, shoot or shoot. Because Carlos Correa moved very quickly. He's like, I don't know, maybe I want to go back to the Astros. And the Astros were like, how much of the payroll do you want us to take? And the Twins were like, most of it. And the Astros are like, cool, bam, you got your infield for the playoffs. I love talking about deals like that. Did the Cubs make any along those lines? No. And that's where I have an issue. Did they make some transactions that mattered? Yeah, they acquired Andrew Kittredge. They added to their bullpen. You know, I think he was here in town already, so that was an across the hotels type of move, but he's 35. Former White Sox Michael Soroka, as we had mentioned before, Ronnie Cruz and Christian Franklin go in that deal, which was key that they added to their pitching. And when you also consider Taylor Rogers being added as well, and Willie Castro, who may be the biggest name as far as what the Cubs needed, but I also think of what they've given up over this time. When you consider that, for example, they DFA Chris Flexen. They DFA'd Ryan Pressly yesterday.
That's a big move.
That one to me was that was as significant as some of the trades they made, because this is the second year in a row where they give up something big. Either in this case, it was a trade and take on Presley's salary from Houston. Last year, of course, it was Hector Neris. Veteran arms that you expected to do a lot. And they're telling you that not only were they not good enough to stay with the team, but also they had to then fix that problem. This wasn't necessarily, for me, a Cubs trade deadline where you saw them add. And for that reason, I don't know if they did enough to contend in the National League. In my opinion, no. I wanted to see more. When you consider how much other teams were able to do, especially in the American League, but they didn't have to give up a lot to get what they needed. I'm looking at Seattle, for example, who got Josh Naylor, and they got, adding to Cal Raleigh, they also got Eugenio Suarez, and they didn't even have to give up their top eight prospects. There were deals that could have been done. Mason Miller, for example, with years of control, that was a deal that was in somebody's sights. And J.P. Sears goes to the Padres in that one as well. They got exactly what a lot of people wanted, the Padres did, in that one. Because you got a reliever who had years of control, and you get starting help as well. That's the difference here when you look at how the other teams were doing things.
Layla, this was a very, very disappointing trade deadline for Jed Hoyer, because he told us leading up to the trade deadline they wanted arms. They needed starting pitching help. This was not a secret. They did not get starting pitching help. You could say, oh, well, Mike Soroka, he's been a starter for the Washington Nationals. Sure.
No, the Sox.
And for the White Sox. And for the Braves. But his current ability to help the Cubs and their rotation, I don't think anyone's putting stock in that and saying, oh, there's a difference maker in Michael Soroka. I look at him more of as a replacement for Chris Flexen. This deadline was sorely disappointing for Jed Hoyer, the Cubs, and their fan base. And I don't know that there's going to be this sharp morale increase in the clubhouse. You know how it goes every year at the trade deadline. The team plays well enough on the field, any team, and you give them an injection, a boost, and say, we believe in you, and here's how much we believe in you. We gave up future prospects to make your push for a possible World Series championship even better. And I look at this team, and I can say this team is better than they were a week ago. That's one thing I can say. But that doesn't mean that they're good enough to compete with the best teams in Major League Baseball, especially when you look at the relievers that they did go get. It's Soroka, it's Andrew Kittredge, it's Taylor Rogers. Those guys are better than perhaps some of the arms you have in your bullpen, because all those guys have a K per nine rate over nine. That means they strike out more than a batter per inning. That's good. But there were more elite relievers out there to be had. And I think knowing that Eugenio Suarez, as you just pointed out, was on the move, and the Mariners, they didn't have to give up one of their top eight prospects to get him. I think that speaks to what Jed Hoyer's looking at in terms of his priorities. And he said they didn't have as many starting pitchers available as they had imagined would be available. But my thing is this. I saw starting pitchers get moved yesterday. I saw a former Cy Young Award winner go to Toronto and Shane Bieber. Bingo. I saw Merrill Kelly go to Texas. Bingo. I saw Adrian Hauser, who allegedly the Cubs, they were on the phone with. There were talks up to the final hour of the trade deadline. I saw him get moved as well. And so what I'm looking at, when I see a team like the Philadelphia Phillies, who lost their closer and won't have their closer in the playoffs because of a gambling situation, I see Joan Duran. I was like, you could have had him.
Apparently, the entire Minnesota Twins team was up for sale.
10 guys out of the 26-man roster removed.
Bingo. So when I also look at the White Sox, for example, who are in the same division, holding on to guys like Mike Tauchman and Luis Robert, look at what the Twins did for their organization yesterday. And you know, you bring up the Rangers, and that's why I think there are so many other lessons when it comes to how deals were done yesterday. Did you have to get creative? Sometimes. The Mariners gave up three prospects to get Suarez, as we mentioned, but it was number 9, number 16, and I believe number 17. So if you look at it through that lens, that tells you exactly what the price was. Are you willing to part with number 9, 16, and 17 in your system for Eugenio Suarez when you know you have one guaranteed season with Kyle Tucker? My answer would have been yes. And the funny part is about the Rangers rotation, I think there were a lot of GMs that would have stood pat and said, we're good, we don't have to add. And that's not what Texas did, as we know. So I think when you consider that part of it, as you mentioned, there were other deals that could have been made where you're saying to yourself, where was that creativity? And I don't necessarily know that we saw that. I also now question our timeline with this team. I want to know, why didn't you have the same sense of urgency? Like when we saw Seattle go after Suarez and go after Josh Naylor, you knew exactly the message they were sending. This is our year. This is most importantly, Cal Raleigh's year. What are we going to do to make the most of it? And they did.
Jed Hoyer talked about not wanting to sacrifice years in the future by giving up too many prospects. I'm still trying to sort through exactly who was on the table and who was not. I know Moises Ballesteros reported that he was not available to teams.
Reportedly he wasn't available.
But my whole thing is, if Eugenio Suarez was available and you could have gotten him with a Moises Ballesteros type package, I would have thought that would have been a move to make. My whole thing has been this. The offense is good. It's been the best offense in baseball. And so I'm not saying you necessarily need to bolster the offense, because there's not a lot of places where you can get better looking around and seeing the guys that were moved. I mean, you mentioned Carlos Correa. I don't think he's been a good player.
But the point is that the Astros will always say, is the person we have playing that position right now, for example, when they've got injury issues and Jeremy Pena is one of them, is the person playing that position right now better than somebody that we could go get? And their answer is typically, if it isn't, we're doing a deal.
No.
And that is not how the Cubs operate. Think about the Rangers starting rotation. For example, Nathan Eovaldi, Jacob deGrom, Jack Leiter, Patrick Corbin, Kramer Rocker, and Tyler Mahle, who's injured. And they added to it.
I think the biggest takeaway for me from what Jed Hoyer did is one of inaction. Not going to get a bona fide starting pitcher. I mean, you didn't even go get Adrian Hauser. I wanted two starting pitchers. And you make the argument Mike Soroka is a starting pitcher, but let's be honest. We don't see him. I see him more of a bulk swing guy on this team replacing Chris Flexen.
Did you replace Chris Flexen with Michael Soroka?
And so if that's the case, like not even getting Adrian Hauser, which I said was, yes, a back of the end guy, but with plus side stuff because of how good he's been this season, you're basically saying your announcement to the world is, it's Shota Imanaga, it's Matthew Boyd, it's Jameson Taillon and Javier Saab when they come back, and it's Kate Horton.
And pray.
And if you look around the rest of the National League and see what other teams have in their starting rotations, it begs the question, do you really believe that you're starting pitching in a playoff series, a short series, a seven-game series, any kind of series, can match up and go above and beyond the other teams?
You're also praying that Shota Imanaga doesn't have the start that he had against the White Sox. You're praying that Matthew Boyd didn't have the start that he had his last time out where he goes four innings and gives up three. I understand that bullpen arms reign supreme at the trade deadline, and that message was communicated loud and clear in baseball. The Dodgers have shown you that sometimes you're going to have a bullpen game. But the difference is they threw down for the three best available relievers in baseball in the offseason and then decided to add to what they could. And they know that guys are coming online out of health who have more accomplished resumes. And they just have more arms, simply put. They have more arms. And also, their talent, even now, is more consistently established as a 1-9 lineup. Did anybody sway me outside of thinking that they're still the favorite to win the World Series? No.
I think that's the thing, though. When you say who's the World Series favorite, it's probably, all things considered, still the Dodgers. But I think the bigger thing is, did you get closer to the top? And I don't think they got closer to the top.
The reason I mentioned the Mariners so much is because I feel like the concept is similar in that Cal Raleigh's year is something that they wanted to capitalize on. So they knew what the challenges were in their division, and they added with more offense. They added with guys who made the lineup less one person needed, like less dependent on the one individual. And when you look at the Cubs lineup and how you see, for example, say Suzuki's numbers aren't the same as when Kyle Tucker has a stretch where he's more consistent. July was a really good example. When you know that that's just the flaw in the lineup inherently, when you know that you've got 1 year of a guy, just like Seattle has this year for this amazing season for Cal Raleigh, different when it comes to the contract terms, how are you capitalizing on it? How are you ensuring yourself success, especially over the last 2 months where you've seen your division rival play the best baseball and you slump relative to your first 2 months of the season? And that's why I give all of this a lot of pause. Do you add arms? Yes, absolutely. But is it enough? I tend to think that when you think you have enough, you still have to do more if you really want to actually contend. And there's a GM who's from here, who's up the street, who I want to listen to in our next segment who illustrates that. And I also want to listen to the GM who's directly up the street at Wrigley talk to Danny Parkins last night during the Radiothon after the deals he made. So let's listen to Dave Dombrowski and Jed Hoyer next. This is Raheem and Harris on The Score.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
I'm Josh Scherer.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich
free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
Obviously, our goal was to add depth to the pitching staff, and the goal was to add depth to the bench. I think Willie Castro, in some ways, does that with one person. I think from a pitching standpoint, adding three guys was obviously something that we focused on. I'd say from a starting pitching standpoint, it's a really tight market, I guess the way I would say it. Very few rental starters, effectively no starters that had 1 year of control after this. And then the controllable starters, none of those guys changed hands.
As you heard me ask, that was from Jed Hoyer yesterday after the trade deadline. That was his press conference, media availability. This is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score. We just got the news a few minutes ago that Moises Ballesteros has been sent back down, that from Taylor McGregor. And as a texter aptly put, so you're untouchable in a trade, but you're not good enough to play for your team. Dramatic pause, because I agree. We're trying to examine what the Cubs did at the trade deadline. And part of the reason I'm so, I think, fired up about this and the fact that they didn't do as much is because we're paying attention to other GMs as well and how they are acting. Jed told you things were going to have to get creative at the deadline. And I think you saw that. You saw what, 20 deals yesterday that were done total. There were definitely trades that were made. But I want to listen to a guy who takes a different approach than what you hear a lot of the general managers in Major League Baseball do. And it's somebody who has had established success now at three different teams when you consider Dave Dombrowski's resume. You know that that guy's going to go for it at the deadline. I don't know how you feel, Marshall, about him, but when I hear the reputation of mortgaging the present or mortgaging the future to win now, I always think to myself, the World Series isn't cheap, and you're going to have to make those deals. And you at least know that that dude is going to try.
My whole thing is this. The Phillies will spend money, period.
They'll spend money and they'll spend prospect capital.
And guess what? If they run out of prospects, they'll just spend more money. That's why that works for them, because they are operating from a completely different place than where the Cubs operate from. Look at why their guy, their MVP, Bryce Harper, is on that team as opposed to on the Cubs.
And also, they know that Bryce Harper isn't getting any younger. And so they're trying to take advantage of what they see their window to be. They acquire Johan Duran from the Twins for catcher Eduardo Tate and right-handed pitcher Mick Abel. So we know that those are two prospects that that the Phillies have. And Abel was ranked number two in Philly system for several years, but now he's number six. The point is, they did part with a big prize to give the Twins something that they wanted. But listen to him talk about the need and the reason why. This was on NBC Sports Philadelphia.
Well, I mean, we quite a few closers, or quite a few relievers. There weren't very many available at the start of the night. Some of the other organizations decided to not make some moves, so we just thought he was the best guy out there, really, is what it came that was available to be acquired. A lot of clubs have been talking about if we were going to acquire their closer, that they were asking for Andrew Painter. We decided that we weren't going to trade Andrew in this trade. And so we felt this was a deal that we got a dominant closer for a tough price, two good players, but something that we think where we are makes sense. We would not have paid this price for a rental. So that's what really is a difference for us. So not only this year, but two more seasons after this. So if we were talking a pure rental, we would not have traded these players for that. I really didn't think this one was possible, a couple days ago. I'm not really sure what the difference was in that regard. I do think that having Abel close to the big leagues made a difference, because I do know that they had a lot of interest in him. We've heard from a lot of clubs who were trying to get him after we got him. And so they really picked up over the last few days. And really, even this afternoon, when we were, or late morning, I should say, because we were at the hotel, that's when we really kind of, okay, give me your best offer. We had gone over so many different other possibilities and names. And, so it really picked up over the last, really more so today. This is where really, Derek had mentioned to me, I don't know what time it is, it was, well, what the time was, 5 o'clock. It was 5 o'clock, he was going into an ownership meeting, 5 o'clock Minnesota time, to discuss whatever options they had, he told me. But really, a couple hours before that is when we really start going back and forth.
That is a guy who identified the need, identified the market, knew he was probably going to have to pay more than he wanted, and did it anyway. And you see what mattered to him when you know exactly what the priority list was and what the order of importance was, don't you? It's like the algebra formula is clear as crystal. It was biggest need, what the price was, how many years of control, what the deal was going to be prospect-wise. Period. Paragraph.
The problem here, Layla, is that, to quote one of my favorite lines, favorite quotes of all time from The Wire, from HBO, you want it to be one way, it's the other way. And what I mean by that is you want the Cubs to operate like the Phillies that have a $289 million payroll, the Phillies that have the fourth highest payroll in baseball. And let me tell you this, Dodgers, Mets, Yankees, Phillies, Blue Jays, Astros, Texas Rangers, Padres, you heard all those teams' names called yesterday when it came to trade deadlines, right?
You did.
The only team that you did not hear their name called as far as trades that have bigger payrolls than the Chicago Cubs this year, the Atlanta Braves. Why? Because they're hurt. Their entire starting rotation from the start of the season is right now on the injured list. They are out of it. They are hurt. Everybody else was more aggressive. And while the Phillies have six players making over $20 million a year, the Cubs only have two, and it's barely over $20 million a year.
And all that's cool, except he's still telling you why he traded. Like, that was a barter. That was not an outright monetary transaction. He's telling you why he made that deal. And that's it. You're only overpaying for somebody when there's no market for that individual. I'm thinking about the Patrick Williams contract when I say that. This is Raheemy and Harris on 670 The Score, and I'm not trying to throw him under the bus. I'm giving the example. And you're not seeing the Bulls do that now with Josh Giddey. Maybe for the same reason. I say all that, though, to show you that's what a clear path looked like for that general manager. And when I think about what Jed Hoyer had to say, and I appreciate his availability, I am happy that he joined Danny Parkins right after the trade deadline for the Cubs for a Cure Radiothon. But he didn't have the same approach. He did say, just like Dombrowski, that certain people they thought were available were not going to be. So let's listen to what he had to say about how he viewed the prospects that are coming down the line and what he needed to do at this deadline.
No, that's the wrestling match over and over is, you know, is that, right? It's you know, at what expense are you doing this to your future? And listen, like, we had a lot of conversations about controllable starters. We had a lot of conversations about, you know, good relievers. I think ultimately it wasn't an unwillingness to part with prospects. It was sort of an unwillingness to go to the length that we would have to go and the depth and the volume we would have to go. So I think there's no question, you know, you have to be willing to part with prospects to get really good players. I think the question is just how many and at what cost. But you framed it really well, and that's the constant back and forth you have all the time. Like, you know, and also it's about what players are actually available. And I think that's always an important thing. At the deadline, it's a sort of a select group of players based on who's out of the race and who's willing to transact. Some of the guys that people thought were available, like, they weren't actually even available. There was, you know, the teams that said, we're just not going to talk about that. So, it isn't free agency. You know, it's a kind of thing where sometimes there's just simply players that are unattainable, either because they're on contenders or because the teams, you know, want to win next year and they don't want to focus on that, or they don't want to do that to their fan base. So, in some ways, it was an interesting deadline in the sense that some of the teams that I really expected to sell bought, and some of the teams that I expected to sell just stood pat. And when that happens, there's not much you can do to make those players available. So I think in that regard, it was certainly an interesting deadline because the behavior wasn't quite as rational as usual.
That was Jed Hoyer talking to Danny Parkins during the Cubs for a Cure Radiothon. This is Raheem and Harris on 670. The Score in this segment is brought to you by Almost Free Teeth. Save on dental implants today. When I hear Jed Hoyer talk and I hear Dave Dombrowski talk, those are two very different thought processes, concepts, approaches, etc. One of them has gotten a lot closer to a World Series than the other recently.
I think one of them is fully enabled by his ownership group to do whatever it takes to bring me my trophy. That's the words of John Milton, the owner of the Phillies. And the spending is the indicator. The reason I brought up all those payroll numbers is because the Cubs are 10th in payroll. And everybody, including the Cubs and up, are all in the playoff mix. They're all fighting for a playoff spot. And they all think they can make a charge at the World Series this year, led by what most people have as the World Series favorite. Surprise, surprise, it's the Dodgers who spend the most money. And that's with deferred money to the biggest and best player in all of Major League Baseball, Shohei Ohtani. And so the Cubs have to find a way to navigate around this. And I'm just worried that they're taking this one year, this one magical year, where, to be frank, going back to the beginning of 2025, people are outperforming expectations. Layla, if I told you the Cubs would be a game out of the best record in baseball, and that in doing so, you'd have guys like Carson Kelly having the kind of year that he's having, even Michael Bush, Pete Crow Armstrong, obviously. There's so many guys who are doing more than they've ever done in their Major League Baseball careers. But my issue with what happened at the trade deadline is Jed Hoyer didn't take advantage of it, of the moment, and saying, all right, I'm going to give you whatever you need to go up. And they may still have enough. I'm not saying they're incapable of making a run at the World Series. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you're putting undue pressure now on the offense to keep up what has been an historic season for several members of that offensive squad.
Yeah, to me, there's a couple of things at play here. Number one, you did decide that certain positions where you thought you had your guy weren't good enough when you decided to DFA Ryan Pressly, for example, when you decided to DFA Flexen, when you decided to DFA Vidal Brujan. You decided to upgrade at your bench with Willy Castro, which I think will help this team.
Yeah.
But you didn't do it at the other positions where you're seeing other teams go from good to great. And good to good in the National League, I don't think gets you there. In the American League, where there were a lot more transactions, as you mentioned, yes, it does. The delta is different. But that's not what you are in right now. You can't dictate your market the way you want it. And that's my whole point from the last month on, is that you weren't good enough, even with that record currently as it stands, knowing what everybody else is doing and what they were about to do. You weren't allowed to dictate the market the way you saw fit. You didn't think you had enough prospect capital, evidently, because you wanted to hold on to people who I don't know if necessarily they were worth holding on to. And then you decided the future, which likely is without Kyle Tucker, is going to be more successful for those individuals in the present. And that's where I take offense.
No, I'm completely with you there, except for the one fact that when you talk about going from good to great, there was really only one position for them to do that on offense, and that was third base with Eugenio Suarez. So that's really the only issue I have with the offense. Otherwise, I think they have good enough offense now with Willy Castro put in at that utility spot.
815 says, Jed did the right thing. We want a dynasty, not a single World Series. You wanted a dynasty in 2016, too. It didn't happen. It didn't happen. The game changed around you. That's my point. You know you've got right now. And you decided that when you gave up who you gave up to get Kyle Tucker to begin with. Can't be partially pregnant on these things. I would know. We're going to talk Bears next. A lot happened at Halas Hall this past week. We didn't get to discuss it because of the radiothon. Some really compelling audio, I think, that you need to hear from Ben Johnson. And also, I think a dude proved that once you step on the field, whatever happened before off of it, we should probably forget, or at least try to. That's next on Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
When New Yorkers buy a place with StreetEasy, they have the local expertise they need to stay in the city. When they buy outside the city, they have regrets.
The only way to fix this place would be to move it back to Brooklyn.
When it's time to buy, let StreetEasy connect you with the agent you need to never leave. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
I'm Josh Scherer.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're all on the same page, and I like to take the thoughts. I told that staff when we came back from the summer that I need a bunch of truth tellers around me. I need guys that aren't going to tell me what I want to hear, but are going to tell me how they see it. And then at the end of the day, I'll be able to assess the information and make a decision, and we'll go with it. And that's been the course so far.
That's Ben Johnson telling some truth. This is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score. And that was Ben Johnson, I think, saying things that you don't hear a lot of NFL coaches say. And that was really what perked our ears from his availability at practice yesterday. It wasn't just that. You don't hear a lot about coaches saying, I want somebody to contradict me. I want somebody to be my eyes when I'm not looking at something the right way. Usually it's, oh, we're all in step, we're all in line, everybody's on the same page. You know, things like that that let you know that maybe the idea of disagreement at the top levels isn't something that's wanted. Even that is different from what we've typically heard in the past.
Layla, I look at Ben Johnson as a guy who is a breath of fresh air for a lot of reasons, a lot of different reasons. An offensive-minded head coach, not just that, but a play caller who has been dynamic in his time in Detroit for not just a one-off season, but for several seasons with the Lions. And now you've got him in Chicago, and you're thinking of all the wonderful things that a great offensive mind can bring to an offensive-starved Bears organization. But on top of that, it's what he's been able to eloquently state in real time as things are going on that has been a breath of fresh air compared to several coaching regimes that we've seen here in Chicago.
Let's just mock this up, right? You're going to watch the first preseason game, and Lou Kanellis is awesome, so Lou's not the guy here when it comes to sideline reporters for preseason games. But if reporters said this about football team, you wouldn't be surprised. I talked to Coach, and Coach said that they had the best week of practice they've had so far this season, and that's why they're confident playing other team. That was not what we heard from Ben Johnson when he was talking about practice the day before yesterday.
Ben, you said you were disappointed in the practice yesterday. Was that an effort issue, an execution issue?
Execution, 100%. And like I told the skill players on offense, it was more so, I'll fall on the sword on that one. I didn't do a good enough job installing those plays for them to come out and look the way that they looked offensively.
I love it because two things happen here. One, open criticism of that was not the best practice they ever had. But also, when he pointed the finger, he used that opposable thumb. That's a pretty important one on your hand to use. And he pointed back at himself for maybe why that didn't happen. But here's the important thing. The standard has been set from the jump, but now it's being maintained when things aren't their most pristine. And that's all you ask is, hey, it's training camp. Mistakes will be made. Let's just correct the mistakes and have some accountability as we do such.
When we ask the question, when everybody's talking about accountability, what exactly did you mean in 2024? Is accountability in the room with you right now? In this case, it actually was. It's refreshing. And you don't hear a lot of coaches even say that because I think, frankly, ego. They don't want to let their opponent know that they had a bad week of practice because it might lead to a bad game. But in the NFL, they already know what you're going to do. They already have seen. They saw the game tape, and that's why I find this so refreshing. If he doesn't think something is up to his standard, then it's not. Get it better. And at least you're telling us why you want to try.
I just want this to continue what we've seen so far, and that is growth. I don't care really how bad they are right this second, as long as there is growth, Layla. That is the most important thing, continued growth. If it gets stagnant, now we got a problem. Now we're looking a lot like former regimes.
Absolutely. Our Bears trading coverage on The Score is presented by Chevy Drive Chicago and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. And I think one of the other things that you haven't heard a lot about necessarily is somebody exceeding expectations when it comes to the Bears. We talked about it with the Cubs. But when you talk about the Bears, that hasn't necessarily been the case, especially when it's exceeding expectations for a high draft pick, for example. So think about all the discourse that has surrounded Luther Burden when it came to his availability. Then that question, his, as I like to say, his desire to be on the field. We knew that he was going to miss a lot. I felt like Ben Johnson was just clarifying how he was missing information, not necessarily saying that it was on him because of his hamstring injury. But once he got on the field, the reports about how he was able to perform, yes, there were some setbacks in his initial practice, but like we've said, it's how you're responding to them. Well, apparently in yesterday's practice, he showed out. He impressed people. He was able to show you why the Bears decided to draft him. And I think that that's something that is really important. Ben Johnson talking about how his speed jumped off the tape. That's the kind of growth, or at least potential showing up in places, that you want to hear out of somebody. Let's listen in, I think, to what Jason Leisure asked Ben Johnson when it came to what Luther Burden was able to do. Oh.
Yeah, I mean, it's only been 2 days and some team drills, and the play speed stood out to me yesterday. I was really impressed with that. Still working on the alignment and the details, as you would expect for a young player, but the play speed jumped off the tape.
All right, so that I thought that was the same soundbite, but it turns out that they were two. We go off a Google Doc, and it wasn't able to be fully visible. But that's the point here, I think, is when you consider what he's able to do once he's on the field. Consistency is another matter. This is training camp. I'm not concerned. But I am encouraged to hear that somebody steps on the field. Yeah, you might have had a rough first day once you got back, but then that's how you're showing up the next time.
He was a second-round pick, right?
Who should have been a first, according to a lot of boards.
Okay, so this is what needs to happen. When a guy is taken that high in the draft, he better step on the field and show you something. So I'm encouraged by Luther Burden III showing you the flashes of why he is so highly thought of as a wide receiver from the play caller on the team in Ben Johnson. Look, it's probably going to take a while for him to get up to speed after having missed so much time when you talk about the OTAs and everything else. But he's out there now. That's the important thing. The hamstring seems like it's fine. And now I'm looking to see how Ben Johnson is going to utilize not only him, but also Roma Dunze, DJ Moore, as we saw some of him in the backfield, Colston Loveland, Cole Kmet. There's a host of offensive weapons. I want to know how Ben Johnson is going to use those chess pieces and how he's going to have the puppeteer under center or in shotgun and Caleb Williams run things. Like, get that thing up and running as quickly as possible. And I know it's not going to be week one of the regular season when it's at full capacity, but it's like the Death Star. You ain't got to be at 100% to be effective. You could blow some things up without being at 100%.
Absolutely. And either way, I feel better about Bears practice this week because of things like this than I did the week before. And that's the idea. That's what you want out of training camp.
Yeah, remember last Friday what we were talking about and how we're talking Friday? It's a different tone. I'm going to be back out of Bears training camp practice tomorrow, so I'll let you know what I find when I get out there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to your report on Monday about what you did see. I know Lawrence went out there yesterday because of the radiothon, and I feel like similar sentiments were expressed. Bears off today with a well-deserved day off, so they get back to work tomorrow, and that's why making mistakes is okay. You want to hear it, because if it means that they're getting better, then that's a good thing. You're listening to Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score and the Odyssey and iHeartRadio apps. Coming up next, the Cubs had a big announcement today. And if you missed it, let's go over it with the president of business operations, who also was on yesterday for the Cubs for a Cure Radiothon. A lot to catch up on with Crane Kenny. We do that next on The Score.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids to a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
A message from a former New Yorker, presented by StreetEasy.
We left Brooklyn Heights in 2021, and we miss it. We went from sharing a neighborhood with a few celebrities to sharing a neighborhood with my wife's parents.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich
free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.